using healthier ingredients. For instance, pizza can be made whole wheat with homemade tomato sauce and a high-quality cheese. You can eat natural frozen yogurt and mix in some berries instead of eating store-bought ice cream. You can make homemade French fries instead of buying oil-coated frozen ones. Spices and herbs also have a lot to do with taste. Many vegetables rarely taste good alone. However, if you add the right spice or herb to them, they get much tastier. Oftentimes, so tasty, you develop a craving for these foods. To give you a few examples, here are spices and/or herbs that dramatically change the taste of certain healthy foods. Eggs. Chives, salt, and/or black pepper. Scrambled eggs alone can be a bit bland. Adding any of these makes the taste much better. Zucchini. Cayenne pepper. Basil. Cumin. Garlic powder. Oregano. Or thyme. A lot of herbs and spices go well with zucchini. Few people enjoy this vegetable alone, but adding just a pinch or two of any of these flavor intensifiers can make a world of difference, especially if you grill it. Brown rice, turmeric, cumin, or soy sauce. Most people used to eating white rice are not as happy with the taste of brown rice. Try combining it with turmeric or cumin, or add soy sauce. You can also check Asian spice mixes for rice. Vegetable soups. Salt, black pepper, allspice, bay leaf, and/or garden lovage. Also, add a lot of onions to improve the flavor. Simple, everyday vegetable soups are perfect for anyone who doesn't like cooking every single day. You can make a big pot of soup on Monday and eat it until Thursday. With the right mix of spices, you can certainly develop a craving for soup, like I have. Potatoes. Salt, rosemary, paprika, oregano, basil, cayenne pepper, dill, and/or parsley. Potatoes, when eaten in moderation and not in the form of French fries, aren't as unhealthy as people believe. The key is to avoid frying them, instead opting for healthier methods, ideally by steaming. Once you come up with your perfect mix of herbs and spices, steamed potatoes might become more appealing than oil-coated French fries. Experimentation can go a long way to avoid, or at least greatly reduce, cravings for certain foods. Once you develop permanent alternatives you find as tasty or tastier than what you have craved, maintaining your healthy eating habits will get easier. It will also be a great lesson in creative self-discipline, going around a temptation or eliminating it altogether rather than caving in. Side mission: try intermittent fasting. Intermittent fasting, IF, is a pattern of eating in which you periodically fast for a specified number of hours. Most people follow a basic form of intermittent fasting every day. Unless you wake up at night and eat, each day you fast for at least 8 hours. That's why the first meal during the day is called breakfast. Proponents of intermittent fasting suggest fasting for longer, usually at least 16 hours a day. Other approaches include alternate day fasting, eating what you want one day and not eating anything the next day. 24-hour fasts, say you stop eating at 6 p.m. and resume eating at 6 p.m. the next day, and 40-hour fasts, by skipping an entire day of eating. I've already talked about IF in a few of my previous books, most notably, How to Relax. So I won't repeat myself here to address the most common questions and doubts. The only disclaimer I have to leave here is that intermittent fasting is not for everyone. If you suffer from any health conditions, speak with your doctor first. Having said that, most healthy people should have no problem skipping an entire day of eating, or just a meal or two. It's a beneficial thing for your health and your self-discipline. Hunger is an interesting feeling to handle. If you're used to eating every 3 or 4 hours, you'll feel hungry every 3 or 4 hours. It doesn't matter whether you've eaten enough calories for the day or not. Your body's signals follow your habits. And here's when willpower comes into play. At first, it's uncomfortable to feel hunger and not give in. You'll be tempted to grab something to eat. But instead, you'll let this feeling pass and continue your fast. The goal is to teach yourself how to stay disciplined despite an uncomfortable feeling. Just like having a regular workout routine is uncomfortable at first, and you feel tempted to get instant gratification, spend your day in front of the TV instead of going to the gym, so will fasting test your willpower. It takes a certain kind of discipline and toughness to go without food for longer periods of time. But with enough experience, hunger becomes a non-issue, or at least less powerful than it used to be. Try fasting once or twice and see how it makes you feel. Perhaps you can make it part of your daily or weekly routine to change your relationship with food and learn how to control your urges better. If you love eating, but still can't go without food for 40 hours, few things will pose a challenge to your willpower. Habit: wake up early or go to sleep at regular hours. If you wake up and go to sleep every single day at about the same time and feel well rested, you can probably skip this part. If you feel your sleep schedule requires some work, working on this aspect of your life will improve your health as well as help you build more self-discipline. There's an important caveat regarding waking up early. While it's generally perceived that waking up early is a virtue, a habit everyone who wants to become successful should develop, science doesn't necessarily agree. In fact, a German study on chronotypes shows that the brains of early risers are different than the brains of night owls. In other words, waking up early isn't always optimal for you if you're predisposed to staying up late. However, don't use that as an excuse for waking up late if you don't feel well following your normal sleep schedule. For a long time, I used to go to bed at 3 or 4 in the morning and wake up at 2 p.m. I could have argued I was a night owl, but I never felt particularly well rested. When I went from one extreme to the other, waking up at 6 a.m., I learned that early rising was a more optimal choice for both my energy and general productivity. There are two general approaches to waking up early. If your goal is to wake up at 6 a.m., you can either set your alarm for 6 a.m. right away and take it from there, or wake up a minute or two earlier each day. Usually after at least a few weeks, you reach your goal. I prefer the cold turkey approach. It's a difficult test for your self-discipline, but produces results more quickly. Even if you slip up a few times, you can change your internal clock in a matter of a week or two instead of several weeks. Few things test your self-discipline more than the alarm clock forcing you to leave your comfortable, warm bed and start a new day, especially if you're starting it with something you don't particularly enjoy. That's why waking up early is a perfect exercise to build mental toughness and learn how to overcome your weaknesses. If waking up early is a particularly difficult goal for you, as it was and sometimes still is for me, consider increasing the stakes. It can be something as simple as scheduling something for the morning that you absolutely can't miss, so it will provide motivation to avoid hitting the snooze button. Or as deliberate as placing a bet with your friend. If you don't wake up at 6 a.m., you'll pay him $20, or whatever is painful enough to you that it will motivate you to get up. For instance, I have foreign language lessons in the morning. Even if I don't feel like waking up early, as it sometimes happens, my body will wake me up right before the lesson. It takes a lot of willpower to unlearn the habit of staying up late and hitting the snooze button several times before getting up. Once you permanently change your sleep schedule and start regularly waking up early, you'll experience a powerful shift in self-discipline. You'll develop your own tools to stick to your resolutions even when you're half asleep and susceptible to choosing the easy way out. If you're not an early riser, you can introduce a habit of going to sleep and waking up at regular hours. But please, test your hypothesis and spend at least a month following an early morning routine. It also requires daily self-discipline, helps you better structure your day, and optimizes your body. It gets confused if you wake up and go to sleep at random hours. Let's review. Physical excellence leads to mastery in life. Regular physical activity is a keystone habit, which means it positively affects other areas of your life, helping you make several beneficial changes by only introducing one. Becoming a fit and healthy person is one of the best things you can do to build your self-discipline. It requires patience and dedication to the process, which are the two things you need to develop in order to enjoy higher levels of willpower. Exercises can be either anaerobic, high intensity, short duration, or aerobic, lower intensity, longer duration. For optimal results, choose at least one anaerobic and one aerobic type of activity. To overcome the five most common reasons why people quit their fitness programs, develop intrinsic motivation, coming from within you, not the rewards you expect. Find exercises you enjoy, because building self-discipline isn't about making your life permanently miserable. Considering working out with a partner, because accountability helps stay on track. Have the right expectations. And make your routine reflect your personal values, so you make time for exercise. Whenever you don't feel like working out, remind yourself that it's a test of your self-discipline. If you resist the temptation to get lazy, you'll get rewarded with a fulfilling, though possibly more demanding than usual, training that will develop your toughness. If you don't make time for health, you'll have to make time for illness. Getting rid of excess weight is not optional. It's mandatory if you want to become self-disciplined and grow in other areas of your life. If you're struggling with cravings, learn how to shift your focus from the temptation to something else. Don't keep any forbidden foods at home. Whenever you have a craving, give yourself something else to do for 15 minutes, as it will probably reduce in intensity if you only wait. Come up with healthy habits that will replace your usual routines whenever you feel a craving, such as going on a walk instead of driving to the nearest pizza joint. Be realistic about the potential negative consequences of giving in to a craving. When you eat a certain unhealthy food, it won't feel as good as you think it will when you crave it. Don't be afraid to schedule cheat days or cheat meals so you have something to look forward to. It will only make dieting easier and still help you achieve your goals. Always think about the long-term perspective. If you can't imagine sustaining your current eating habits for the rest of your life, you're probably too restrictive. You won't deal with cravings if you don't develop permanent, healthy, and enjoyable alternatives to the foods you crave. Don't rely on your self-discipline only. Get creative and find ways to satisfy your cravings without actually succumbing to them. Intermittent fasting is a good way to test your ability to choose postponed gratification over instant rewards. Skip eating from time to time to reconnect with the uncomfortable feeling of hunger. Making a change to wake up early is one of the most difficult tests of your self-discipline, because we're usually the most susceptible to giving in to temptations in the morning when we're still groggy and half asleep. Test different waking hours to see how they affect your mood, and also to see whether you can overcome your weaknesses. Chapter 3. Discomfort builds character. It was a partly sunny summer day. I went with my friend to a nearby lake to kayak. The surface was still and the sun shone on us. We rented kayaks and went on our merry way. 30 minutes later, blue skies turned into a dark, menacing dome of clouds. Wind rocked our kayaks, Paddling got more and more difficult as waves formed on the surface of the lake, and then the heavy rain came, soaking us within minutes. With blisters on our fingers, we fought our way back. The waves crashed against my kayak and continuously turned it into the wrong direction. My shoulders and hips were tense and exhausted within a few minutes of rapid paddling. And yet, despite what seemed like a nightmarish turn of events, I felt exhilarated. Like a madman, I laughed and grunted to the rhythm of the wild paddling. Even when the waves rocked the kayak so much I was afraid I would go into the water, I still enjoyed the experience. Even a fresh pink burning blister on my thumb didn't ruin my mood. 15 minutes later, the skies cleared up and the sun shone on us again. We paddled back to the shore, smiling and laughing at the wild experience, despite our sore bodies. It hasn't always been like that for me. I learned how to feel confident despite discomfort and draw pleasure out of it thanks to conscious practice. When I mastered how to appreciate the challenges for what they were, great adventures and opportunities to grow, my life got easier. Indeed, life's easier when you live it the hard way. How comfortable do you feel with discomfort? Have you ever experienced an uncomfortable situation and laughed in spite of it? Do you seek inconvenience or stay as far away from it as possible? Discomfort is part of human nature. For thousands of years, humans lived in dire circumstances, fighting for survival every single day. It's not in spite of the obstacles, but thanks to them that we thrive today. If nature hadn't tested us, we wouldn't have developed ways to protect ourselves against it. Despite modern conveniences, life today is still similar to what it used to be. Any bad things we experience in our daily lives make us stronger and more prepared to deal with similar problems in the future. If you didn't scrape your knees as a kid and get yourself a few bruises, how capable of dealing with pain would you be today? Seneca, Epictetus, and Marcus Aurelius, three famous proponents of Stoicism, all proposed imposing mild self-discomfort to prepare oneself for possible adversity and to develop more appreciation of the things one takes for granted. Professor William B. Irvine writes in his book, A Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy, that pursuing pleasure, Seneca warns, is like pursuing a wild beast. On being captured, it can turn on us and tear us to pieces. Or changing the metaphor a bit, he tells us that intense pleasures, when captured by us, become our captors, meaning that the more pleasures a man captures, the more masters he will have to serve. If you purposefully refuse to serve some of your masters, you'll grow more capable of dealing with adversity. Nobody lacks mental toughness when the circumstances are perfect. Your self-discipline is only tested during times of adversity. If you make it a regular habit to put yourself in tricky situations, you'll be better prepared to deal with them when they happen without your voluntary involvement. Exercise. Get comfortable with cold temperatures. Exposing yourself to cold temperatures is one of the simplest ways to learn how to handle discomfort. The simplest, most insightful exercise is taking a 5-minute cold shower. And no, don't just count 5 minutes in your head. Set a stopwatch and don't leave the shower until 5 minutes pass. Don't cheat. Turn the knob all the way to cold. The period of 2 months I spent taking 2 ice-cold 5-minute showers a day was one of the most helpful things I did to increase my mental toughness. The first time I took a cold shower, my entire body was numb. I struggled not to jump out of the shower after the first hit of water. Several showers later, I became more attuned to the feelings of discomfort, discovering that the first 2 minutes were the most difficult. After 2 minutes passed, suddenly things became much easier, and I knew I could stand the cold without that much difficulty. I then applied the same learnings in other aspects of my life, reminding myself that the first steps usually test your self-discipline the most. If you can handle them, you can handle much more than you think. That's the kind of lesson the exercises in this book are for. You can only learn them on your own. When you discover exactly when and how you're tempted to give in, and what helps you handle discomfort, you'll become more capable of dealing with proposed gratification. I won't say you should take cold showers every day. 2 months after I started taking cold showers, I went back to regular hot showers. I learned my lessons. It makes little sense to make yourself miserable on a daily basis to feel you're tough. Another exercise to test your mental toughness is to go out underdressed for the weather. Obviously, you shouldn't do it when you're sick or when you're going to explore the wild outdoors. However, going for a walk once or twice without a jacket, with only a thin sweater on, can be a valuable experience for building mental toughness. Just be reasonable about it. We're talking about slight discomfort here, not putting yourself in a situation where you can get frostbite or hypothermia. Exercise. Do without something you need. There are certain things and habits you need in your everyday life to feel comfortable. It can be carrying your smartphone everywhere you go, checking your email 10 times a day, drinking coffee first thing in the morning, or sleeping in your warm, comfortable bed. As an example, instead of sleeping in my own bed, I chose to sleep on the balcony of my apartment a few times. It's a simple, easy thing most people, with balconies and backyards at least, can do to experience brief discomfort and stop taking their comfortable bed for granted. What if you're addicted to your smartphone and absolutely can't leave it at home for the fear of not replying soon enough to a message from your friend? You guessed it, leave it at home for a few hours and observe how you feel without it. Stay with your anxiety and go past it. Nothing bad will happen, and you'll only get tougher by getting rid of one of your necessities for a while. Below are a few more examples of doing without something you need. Walk to work instead of driving. In many cities, it's not practical to do, but that's precisely why it's a great self-discipline building exercise. Go camping, ideally away from any facilities, so you're forced to wash or do other hygiene-related activities without modern conveniences. Do a 24-hour email fast. During these 24 hours, don't check your email at all. Don't do it if you're waiting for an important message or can't afford it because your job requires it. That's not the point of this exercise. You can try it when you're on vacation, but still check your email out of habit. Replace your evenings in front of the TV with educational reading, nonfiction books about skills and goals you'd like to achieve. Live like a miser for a week or two. Avoid every single unnecessary expense. Don't buy new food. Eat leftovers, canned food, and all of the bland foods you rarely eat that just sit there in your fridge or pantry. Don't buy any new clothes. Don't spend money on any kind of entertainment. Pretend you don't have any money to spend. You can take it further by learning how to live with less. Each time you want to make a purchase, ask yourself whether it's something you absolutely need. If not, chances are you'll regret the purchase and add more clutter to your life without any benefits. If you're not absolutely sure a purchase will bring long-term value in your life, have the discipline to skip it. Exercise. Rejection therapy. Rejection is an everyday part of our lives, yet most people can't handle it well. For many, it's so painful they'd rather not ask for something at all than ask and risk rejection. Yet, as the old adage goes, if you don't ask, the answer is always no. Avoiding rejection, which in essence means not having enough discipline to deal with this kind of discomfort, negatively affects many aspects of your life. All of that happens only because you're not tough enough to handle it. For this reason, consider rejection therapy. Come up with a request or an activity that usually results in rejection. Working in sales is one such example. Flirting with strangers is another. Haggling or asking for discounts at the store will also work. For more ideas, you can try the game of rejection therapy at rejectiontherapy.com, where you can buy cards with various tasks designed to help you get rejected. 30 days of such a challenge is enough for a powerful shift that will not only help you become tougher, but also more self-confident. By deliberately getting yourself rejected, you'll grow a thicker skin that will allow you to take on much more in life, thus making you more successful at dealing with setbacks and unfavorable circumstances. I performed a variation of this therapy when fighting my shyness. Getting repeatedly rejected made me feel okay with the feeling. After enough practice, my shyness was gone. You can't feel uncomfortable with things you do on a regular basis. Exercise. Failure therapy. Legendary baseball player and coach Yogi Berra once said, "Losing is a learning experience. It teaches you humility. It teaches you to work harder. It's also a powerful motivator." Humility, work ethic, and motivation. All three of these are necessary components of personal growth and self-discipline. If you're not humble, you'll overestimate your ability to resist temptation. In fact, a phenomenon called restraint bias shows that people overestimate their abilities to control impulses and overexpose themselves to temptation. Experiencing failure will keep you away from inflated impulse control beliefs. You're not self-disciplined when you say you are. You're self-disciplined when you're smart enough to know how to avoid temptations altogether. One of the best ways to get more familiar with failure in life is to stretch to achieve difficult goals and set challenges that are potentially out of your reach. Just like a chess player can't keep improving his game against players worse than him, so you can't improve without constantly setting the bar higher. The increased incidence of failure when setting difficult goals, and the subsequent feelings of discouragement, will be a worthwhile exercise to learn how to stay determined despite setbacks. You don't challenge your self-discipline when you never experience failure. It's only when you make mistakes, jump through hoops, crawl under obstacles, and fall face forward when you can test and grow your determination. Habit. Do the most difficult things with no hesitation. It's an old rule in the world of time management that you should do the most important things first, and only when you finish them are you allowed to move on to less essential activities. However, few people follow this sound advice in everyday life. If you have a list of 10 tasks to do, it's easier to focus on the easiest ones that you'd be able to cross off your list quickly. It does nothing to move you closer to your goals. In fact, most of these quick tasks are probably unessential. Yet you do it instead of the hard tasks. Why? Because it requires a lot of self-discipline to beat procrastination and get the uncomfortable tasks done first. Change your habits and do the most difficult things first. Oftentimes, you can do what appears as a difficult and time-consuming task much more quickly than you think. It's only your perception of its difficulty that makes it so hard to get disciplined about it and get to work now. As a writer, I have a simple routine of writing a certain number of words every single day. On the days I don't feel like writing, it's still one of the first things I do in the morning. To break the reluctance, I simply write a few words and take it from there. A few minutes later, I no longer feel any resistance. The longer I hesitate, the weaker my resolve gets. I find this to be the case with virtually every difficult activity I do. If I don't feel like working out in the morning, I don't sit and ponder whether I should go or not. I put on my fitness clothes and go. When I'm at the gym, I can't help but start. I've already taken the first step, and now things will only get easier. Discomfort has a tendency to get overbearing the longer you let it simmer. If you don't give yourself a lot of time to think, instead opting to get the ball rolling and start working on the task, your reluctance will quickly melt away. Repeating the same process each time you don't feel like doing something will help you build a solid self-discipline boosting habit. Exercise. Learn something difficult. One of the most difficult but still manageable goals you can set for yourself to instill more discipline in your daily life is to learn a foreign language. By making it a goal to become a fluent speaker in a language you don't speak, you'll not only acquire a valuable skill, but also discover how to learn in general. This also includes mastering how to deal with discouragement, which is always lurking somewhere nearby, ready to pounce the moment you struggle. Learning foreign languages is a frustrating experience at every level, which means you'll get familiar with the feeling of frustration on a daily basis, and hopefully learn how to deal with it. In the beginning, you'll experience frustration at not being able to understand anything. Later on, you'll get discouraged by what you will see as slow progress. Even when you're an advanced speaker, you'll still feel uncomfortable at times and get mad at yourself when you can't say something you know how to say perfectly in your native language. These kinds of emotions are helpful to understand your patterns when learning a language or working on any difficult goal. What do you do when you feel like giving up? What leads you to this point? What snaps you out of it? Until you get started and experience these feelings on your own, you won't know the answers. In my case, perfectionism is at the steering wheel of my discouragement. Each time I realize I'm far away from the perfect vision of my skills, I get frustrated. However, having discovered this pattern, I have turned it into an empowering one, using my anger as fuel to keep working on my abilities until they are as my mind pictures them. What is it for you? How can you change your default response from the temptation to give up to more determination and discipline to keep going? Here are several more difficult goals and skills to achieve that will help you elicit the same response and develop your own tactics to deal with discouragement and/or discomfort. 1. Learn a difficult sport requiring mastering proper technique. Some sports, like basketball or football, give a huge advantage to certain physical attributes, thus reducing the effectiveness of consistent practice. Few things are more frustrating than having an incredible work ethic and still being far behind other players with innate physical strengths. These sports won't help you build determination and can only leave you bitter with the unfairness of the world. To build more self-discipline by getting comfortable with difficulties, choose challenging sports that reward drills, consistent training, and going the extra mile. Some of these sports include golf, chess, tennis, gymnastics, wrestling, or any other martial arts that don't depend on your size. I'm not saying that you should become a world-class expert in any of these sports. The simple act of long-term practice, dealing with setbacks on the way toward progress, and achieving success is what you're after. The fact that it takes years to become at least average in these sports is what makes this exercise so powerful for building self-discipline. In fact, a Canadian study has shown that regular, structured, extracurricular sport seemed to help kids develop self-discipline needed to engage effectively in the classroom. As Professor Linda S. Pagini, one of the researchers, said, "We found that those children who were specifically involved in team sports at kindergarten scored higher in self-regulation by the time they reached fourth grade." Not all is lost if you're an adult. You can start learning any sport you want at any age. The commitment needed to become an intermediate player in any of the more difficult sports will have the same effect on your self-discipline as in the case of kids. 2. Master a skill requiring patience. If you aren't patient enough to trust the process, you're more likely to give up too soon. If you expect quick results and don't achieve them, you'll be more likely to get discouraged and/or feel guilty you can't live up to your unrealistic expectations. Here are some skills and activities that require a lot of patience, and thus the discipline to maintain focus and determination while waiting for the results. cooking, especially more difficult meals that require an hour or two of prep and 1 or 2 hours of cooking. Since cooking is a difficult skill to master, it takes dozens of tries to develop a trademark dish. It's perfect for exercising self-discipline. Gardening. Most plants take months or years to grow. Some plants, like orchids, can live for months or years without sprouting a single flower. Talk about working on your patience. Creative work, painting, writing, and any other similar creative type of work requires a lot of determination and patience to see through to the very end. Even if it's something you're unlikely to show others, expressing yourself through art and getting used to the long, arduous process of creation will be helpful in developing more self-discipline. Reading. You know how to read, you say. Well, when was the last time you finished an entire novel or full-length nonfiction work without skipping any part? Reading longer books requires patience and endurance, things that will help you grow more self-discipline. Knitting. Firstly, learning how to knit takes months, if not years. Then, knitting an actual piece of clothing can take another few weeks, depending on what you want to knit and how complex it is. And how cool is it to be able to make your own clothes? Now, don't get me wrong. The point is not to choose a difficult sport or skill you hate. If in the beginning, something comes extremely hard to you and you don't enjoy it, there's a high chance you've already recognized subconsciously it's not a good activity for you. For instance, I practiced judo for 3 months as part of the curriculum at the university. I knew after the first few classes that it wasn't for me. I didn't enjoy it. I wasn't good at it, and it was extremely painful for my back. A few years later, I started learning tennis. It only took me a few classes to realize I loved the sport, despite never before trying it. 3. Master Honesty. According to a 2002 study at the University of Massachusetts, 60% of adults can't have a 10-minute conversation without lying at least once, 2 or 3 times on average. Granted, the study was conducted on 121 undergraduates, which is hardly a representation of the entire society. However, there are more sources that confirm the number of people lying regularly hovers around 50%. According to Sonny Bates, CEO of New York-based executive recruiting firm Sonny Bates Associates, 40% of people lie on their resumes. According to online dating research from OkCupid, most of their users either lie about height, they are 2 inches shorter in real life, and income, people make 20% less than they say they are. They also lie about their pictures, stating they're recent while they were taken up to a few years ago. It's not an understatement to say that lying is widespread, and we encounter liars, or tell lies ourselves, every single day. It's difficult to remain honest, especially when what's at stake is your job, self-worth, or chances of meeting a life partner. Yet mastering self-honesty is one of the best things you can do to improve the quality of your life and become comfortable with discomfort. After all, if telling the truth wasn't uncomfortable, nobody would lie. A study conducted at the University of Notre Dame on 110 people between ages 18 and 71 has shown that telling fewer lies, including white lies, was linked with improved relationships. Duh. Fewer feelings of tension or melancholy. Duh, again, how can you not feel tense if you're lost in a web of lies? And, what's most interesting, fewer health problems like headaches and sore throats. How do you stop lying if you're used to telling lies on a daily basis? Start with the realization that your lies, no matter if they're innocent white lies or more serious ones, hurt people. It affects your relationships by destroying trust, the basis of any human connection. Moreover, lies can follow you for years to come. Lying on your resume, lying to your partner. hurting you and those around you over and over again. All for a short-term gain. Is it worth it? Just like with any other activities that put you in discomfort, it takes time to become truly comfortable with being honest all the time. However, the regular practice of being upfront with people and the rewards you'll get for it will help you stay the course and join the minority of people who can be unconditionally trusted. 4. Learn communication skills. In essence, developing communication skills starts and ends with a habit of always putting yourself in the situation of the other person first. If you have enough discipline to tap into empathy before uttering a word, you'll become a better communicator and avoid conflicts. However, it's not easy, and it's certainly not comfortable, to resist the temptation to do the total opposite. It takes consistently applied discipline, so you stick to your new ways rather than resorting to the old, ineffective communication patterns. Negative communication habits, such as getting angry or fighting, are usually passing sensations that can be controlled if you make a conscious effort to catch them before giving in to them. By handling the impulse before making the situation worse, you'll master the ability to communicate with people without resorting to angry arguments. The result of this practice, improved impulse control, will help you in other areas of life, teaching you how to trade a small instant reward with a larger long-term, more positive result. A lot of problems with communication also come from being too judgmental. It's easy to judge others without fully understanding their situation. It's an impulse similar to automatically arguing with someone instead of putting yourself in their shoes. Learning how to handle this impulsive behavior is yet another exercise you can do to become more disciplined. The temptation to judge everyone and everything is often overpowering. It's easy to forget yourself and commence a long, useless tirade that serves nobody. Try to catch yourself each time you find yourself judging someone else and stop. Saying bad things about others rarely helps anyone. Turn it into an empowering exercise by learning how to resist it. Another negative communication habit to break is being unable or unwilling to state your needs and/or say no. It's easier to relent and say that you'll do something rather than refuse and face the uncomfortable consequences of rejecting someone. That's why it's a good idea to learn how to voice your needs and put yourself in these uncomfortable situations so you can handle them better. It can take years to see an improvement if you're naturally a person who puts other people first. But even then, you can still feel bad about putting your needs over the needs of other people. However, it's a valuable and insightful practice that will help you deal better with awkward, uncomfortable situations that can arise when you say what you need or want, or when you say no and the other person doesn't take it well. You can't not grow your discipline by experiencing such circumstances frequently. 5. Learn to trust yourself. Obsessing over what other people think about you is nothing but the inability to have enough discipline to trust yourself. It's easier and more comfortable to ask for validation from other people than to learn how to feel okay without their approval. It's equally easy to do what others tell you to do instead of sitting down and asking yourself what you truly want. However, as we've already covered a few times in this book, choosing comfort rarely helps you achieve your goals. In the case of caring what others think about you or doing things to please them, you choose easy comfort, focusing on being liked over discomfort that would bring more happiness, living your own life without concern about how others perceive you. Obviously, not caring what others think has nothing to do with being insensitive or purposefully making yourself stand out. That would be another dimension of the same behavior, drawing your sense of self-worth from proving you don't need approval. The sweet spot, requiring a lot of self-discipline to master, is to just be the best version of yourself. The opinion of others doesn't matter to you either way. It's neither about doing socially accepted things nor going against the stream. It's about doing what's right to and for you and staying the course despite doubts and/or other people nagging you to change your path. A personal example from my life comes from the 2 years spent at the university. Despite knowing well that college wouldn't be the right place for me, I relented because it was what young people after high school were supposed to do. 2 years later, I dropped out and decided to follow my own path, far away from formal education and the 9-to-5 world. It was filled with doubt and difficulties, but in the end, carving my own path instead of following the prescribed route helped me reach my dream lifestyle. If it wasn't for the discipline to keep pushing despite not getting much approval from other people, I'm sure I wouldn't be so happy today. In this case, the mental toughness I needed to travel my own path has helped me build the entire framework of my life and trust myself instead of choosing the easy way out by following what others do. 6. Stop complaining. For the majority of us, hardly a day goes by without uttering at least a few complaints. I hate this weather, the traffic is so bad, she's always late, how dare he serve me cold dinner? None of these complaints provide value in our lives, yet we continue to say them because it's easier than actually doing something about these things, or accepting them if we can't change them. It's difficult and uncomfortable to stop complaining and instead turn towards solutions. But ultimately, it's a powerful practice that will both help you grow as a person and become more in control of yourself. Best-selling author and speaker Will Bowen suggests a 21-day complaint fast. To complete the challenge, you can't complain for 3 weeks in a row. A slip-up sends you back to day one, making it a difficult challenge that will require weeks or months to complete. I used to complain endlessly, especially about the weather. When I reduced the number of my complaints, sometimes I still slip up, and accepted whatever I couldn't control, my life became happier and easier. This, in turn, helped me develop more self-discipline. 7. Overcoming shyness. Few things can limit your chances of success more than shyness. A lack of confidence is a crippling condition that affects every single area of life, making it difficult to achieve goals and grow as a person. It's also one of the most challenging problems to deal with, requiring incredible amounts of self-discipline to overcome. You can only deal with shyness by putting yourself in uncomfortable situations on a daily basis. The shyer you are, the more stressful situations you have to experience before you become confident. Months of constant exposure to stressors can test even the strongest people. However, the goal you'll ultimately achieve, a life free of being shy, is one of the most important goals you can ever accomplish. I used to be a shy person for a large part of my life. It was my worst problem, but also one of the best things in my life because it forced me to travel the uncomfortable path to solve it. Even if you don't suffer from terrible shyness and merely don't consider yourself a particularly confident person, consider working on your self-confidence by exposing yourself to social circumstances you avoid, like speaking with strangers. Here are a few simple exercises to make you more comfortable with social awkwardness, which in turn will make you a more confident person. Talk with random strangers. Chatting up random strangers is a powerful way to get rid of shyness. If you lack confidence, start with something simple and easy, like asking for directions or the time. Bonus points if you ask for the time with a phone in your hand or a watch on your wrist. If you have more courage, come up with weirder conversational topics or even flirt. Practice eye contact. Initiate eye contact with strangers or catch them gazing at you, and maintain it for as long as you can. Just don't forget to blink and keep a light smile. Otherwise, you can make people uncomfortable, and that's not the point of this exercise. Bonus points for initiating eye contact, maintaining it, and chatting up the person you're looking at. Public speaking. If you're a shy person, few things are more awkward and difficult than standing in front of a group of people and presenting something with a trembling voice and shaky legs. However, that's exactly what you want to destroy your lack of confidence. I attended a few Toastmasters meetings in the past and found them an effective way to get used to speaking in front of strangers, as well as making new friends.